On Sullen FM, this is The Space Show with Andrew Rennie. Amanda Lee Falkenberg is an Australian composer. Her latest work is The Moon's Symphony, which depicts, in orchestral and choral terms, seven of the hundreds of the moons of our solar system. 2 weeks ago, we introduced Amanda and described the moons Miranda and Ganymede. Last week it was Io and Titan. This week we tour Europa and Enceladus. Moon names. Europa. Europa is one of four moons of the giant planet Jupiter that were discovered by Galileo Galilei in 1610. It was named by Simon Marius in 1613. In mythology, Europa was the beautiful daughter of Agenor, the king of Tyre. She was seduced by Jupiter, who had assumed the shape of a white bull. When Europa climbed on his back, he swam with her to Crete, where she bore several children. Under Europa's icy surface lies the first ocean discovered since the Southern Ocean was found here on Earth 500 years ago. It could well harbour life. Now, Europa is slightly smaller than the Earth's moon. And now here is Amanda discussing Europa.
Staying in the Jovian system, we now depart from fire to explore the icy world of Europa, a moon that offers exhilarating possibilities after leaving trails of promising signs that a global subsurface ocean, larger than all of Earth's oceans combined, exists beneath its 20-kilometre ice shell and may also contain microbial life. Europa's oceanic wonders has not been lost on NASA, who are preparing to launch the Europa Clipper, which will soar the skies in 2024 on a seven-year journey to confirm the presence of Europa's oceans and investigate life in outer shores.
And now, let's hear from The Moon's Symphony, the track Europa, and do pay attention to the words and the choral music as well.
Thank you.
That was Europa, played by the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Myron Alsop, with the London voices conducted by Ben Parry. That's from Amanda Lee Falkenberg's The Moon's Symphony. And now we go to a conversation conducted by Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society, conducted in London.
We're going to go on to another moon. That's the Europa Clipper mission, which is under construction now. I hear it's going very well at JPL now. These things take time and sometimes a few extra dollars. But this is the mission that will fly out to Europa and hopefully be able to find some stuff to fly through emanating from that world. One of the reasons we're so curious, of course, about Europa is this possibility that it could be a place to find life. Whether it will be life like us or something completely different, no one knows. We won't know until we go and sniff it out. To help us explore that, help us welcome Imperial College London's own Professor Mark Sefton. Mark, come on up. Mark, you are also on the Europa Clipper team, right?
I am. I'm sat next to Ashley, and we're both sat together on the Europa Clipper mission, yeah.
Did I get it right? I mean, Bob Pappalardo is not here for us to ask. Are things coming along?
Absolutely.
Yep, of course.
Absolutely, yeah. The bits are turning up at JPL, being bolted onto the spacecraft. The spacecraft is coming together.
Humans are not likely to go there anytime soon, right? It's not a nice place to be a human, at least not on the surface. Mark, you're the astrobiologist among us.
I think that's right, but the majority of our exploration of the solar system from an astrobiological point of view is really looking for evidence of life in any form, and life is most likely to be in microbial form. Microbes dominated the Earth through Earth history. You know, we're just the last tick of the clock in the day of Earth's history. So microbial life is the most we could possibly hope for.
Probably not on the surface, right? Because that is made a very nasty place by Jupiter. Linda?
Yes, the radiation coming from Jupiter is very intense. And so if you were on the surface of Europa, it'd be very dangerous for you as a human. You wouldn't last very long, even in a spacesuit. But there's this thick layer of ice that's basically covering over that ocean underneath. And that's where we might find life.
What are we looking at in this incredibly complex surface?
Well, the same tidal forces that affect Io also affect Europa to a lesser extent. So there's a lot of stresses that build up in this ice shell, which cracks. What we see here is the result of intersecting stress fractures and stress patterns, shattering the surface, if you like, of Europa. We know that it's a young surface because there aren't that many impact craters. Impact craters dominate the surfaces of most other bodies in the solar system. Io doesn't have any impact craters at all because there's so much volcanism taking place, which erases them faster than just as they're created. On Europa, there are a few impact craters which point to a young surface. This is why it's so intriguing to go there and so interesting to go there. The possibility that there is there's plume activity and areas where there's been recent resurfacing means that the radiation that's just been mentioned hasn't had a lot of time to degrade what's been brought to the surface. And so one of the things that Europa Clipper will do, one of the things that the instrument that Mark is working on will do, will be to look for this new material, and that will give us clues or show us what's actually making up the crust and anything that's actually coming through from the oceans. Looking for, the chemical fingerprints of this material.
So tough on the surface, but as we heard Linda say, we now know, I mean, there really isn't much question left, is there, that there is this warm, probably salty ocean that is protected by the ice. It's a radiation shield.
Yeah, the subsurface environment is where we're most likely to have habitable conditions.
Amanda, what struck you, what inspired you to create this movement about this moon?
Well, it's interesting because Linda was talking about how they were sort of discussing whether they should have a camera on board, the Voyager spacecrafts. Well, I think there's a compelling story about Dr. Margaret Kilvison and the magnetometer, and you almost cannot talk about Moon Europa without mentioning that a magnificent instrument which detected the subsurface salty ocean, which is critical for the idea of potential microbial life. This particular moon, and at least the LYRIX, there's a lot of question marks because there's a lot of questions that need to be answered, and that's what this whole mission is devoted to, this flagship mission. Of course, that inspired me, and the plume activity that's been always been very compelling. It's Europa's subsurface trying to communicate to the scientists, being very, as I've said before, you know, as opposed to Enceladus, which is gushing all this information, free samples to for spacecrafts to fly through. Europa's been a little bit cheeky and sort of like very tantalises the scientists a little bit more, so it's not as giving as beautiful Enceladus. And so I sort of play into the drama of that, and also there's a sort of a determinations element in atmosphere in the music, because NASA's so keen for these answers to be solved, and so I wanted to sort of play into those themes.
Before we turn our attention to Enceladus, let's take a little breather.
88.3 Southern FM.
Moon names. Enceladus. Enceladus is a moon of Saturn. It was discovered in 1789 by William Herschel and named by his son John for the mythical Titan god Enceladus. According to the myth, Enceladus was crushed by Athene in the battle between the Olympian gods and the Titans. Soil piled on top of him became the island of Sicily. The diameter of Enceladus is 500 kilometres. In recent years, Cassini spacecraft has shown the moon to be active, with geysers shooting into space. Quite appropriate, given that Sicily is a volcanic island.
Staying in the Saturnian system, we now explore Enceladus. Until the arrival of the Cassini spacecraft, Enceladus was primarily thought to be nothing more than just a boring chunk of ice rock. However, Cassini's magnetometer team detected a signal on Enceladus, and it was principal investigator that sensed something fascinating taking place at Enceladus, so flew to NASA JPL to convince the group to reconsider their flybys to get a closer look at Enceladus. And over the years, like a great detective story, the Cassini team pieced together the collective data, and efforts were finally rewarded by a monumental discovery. Rows and rows of gigantic geysers emanating water vapour from the moon's south pole, extending tens of thousands of kilometres into the sky. And so it was the cooperative spirit of the international Cassini team that paved the way to a colossal discovery, thanks to their collective efforts, which forever transformed the direction of planetary science.
Searchlights by Stuart Atkinson. Behold the great geysers of Enceladus. I was sure I would be 80 years old before I saw them. An old man, thankful that I could still see anything, let alone the universe's wonders, on my screen, or whatever fantastic machine displays pictures in the fading light years of my old age. Yet here they are, bright searchlights beaming into an ink-black sky, sweeping for spacecraft, creeping and sneaking past in the dark, and there, an almost auroral curtain of creamy light, like a veil of fine lace draping from an invisible rail. How beautiful, how impossible, space art come to light, a sight never seen by human eyes before. Plumes of silvery mist spewing who knows what into the void as they have for aeons. No slick and streamlined Enterprise flew through this Narian scene of alien snow and frost, but a fragile metal moth sent fluttering from distant Earth to fly swiftly past and glance down at the shattered ground rushing silently past below. At the axe wounds hewn from the icy moon's crust, at the landing lights line the bright blooms leading the eye from the crumpled horizon.
Thank you.
music about the moon Enceladus, a moon of Saturn. And that's from Amanda Lee Falkenberg's The Moon's Symphony, played by the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Maren Allsup, and the London Voices, conducted by Ben Parry. And as Molly Meldrum used to say, hey, do yourself a favour. Go out and buy this. This is wonderful. It's available on Sigman Classics, the publisher. And so, yeah, hunt it down. It's really good music. Meanwhile, let's go back to this discussion with Linda Spilker.
Linda, because your spacecraft revealed it, what are we looking at here?
This is the moon Enceladus. Enceladus is tiny compared to the other moons we've talked about. It's about one-tenth the size of Titan. It's about 500 kilometers in diameter. Could fit nicely across the UK. And it's a tiny world. We expect it to be completely frozen. And instead, Cassini found that those are the bluish features there. We nicknamed them tiger stripes. Out of those come hundreds of individual jets of material forming a giant plume. There's a global ocean underneath the surface of Enceladus. What a surprise. A tiny moon should be frozen solid, and yet this tidal interaction, these resonances, also work at Enceladus. So this is calling for a mission to go back. We have a 10-year plan for NASA called the Decadal Survey, and the second of these big missions is a mission to go back to Enceladus with something called an Orbilander. It would orbit Enceladus, make measurements, and then take the whole spacecraft down to the surface of Enceladus to make measurements, probably right there at the South Pole, close to one of these jets, and make measurements. In fact, you could imagine putting your hand out, putting out a sensor to collect those particles falling like snow, bring it back in, and then doing the analysis. And you aren't going at these high speeds. You've got these great, very sophisticated instruments. Who knows what we might find?
Amanda, I think that your coining of the phrase free samples is going to be adopted by the entire scientific community now. This was inspired the fourth movement in the Moon Symphony. A lot of what we've just been hearing about, right? This possibility, this tantalizing possibility that we may just find that we're not alone.
Yeah, exactly. And what I felt so much about this particular movement is the romance of these outer solar system moons, and not only partly because Enceladus happens to be part of a very beautiful planetary system called Saturn, of course, the beauty pageant of the outer solar system, the winner of that. But not only that, I mean, just how romantic if we could transport ourselves to the surface of Enceladus and see, you know, geysers on Earth can be breathtaking enough, but imagine standing on Enceladus with these geysers that are watery towers of fountains emulating tens of thousands of kilometres into the night sky, actually formed the E-ring of Saturn. And if that wasn't breathtaking enough, you have Saturn in the backdrop accompanying this dreamy scene. I think this is to my point. This is not sci-fi. This is sci-fact. This is actual events happening in our outer solar system. And I think that's what I was really wanting to go after, the romance and the beauty of this experience. And that's what this movement explores.
Through the Plumes by Stuart Atkinson. What strange, warm water wonderland will lie beneath me as I fly overhead. Below me, rushing past, a snow globe scene, a fractured, cratered, wintry plain of gleaming ice as hard as stone, crisscrossed with groaning fissures that open and close like a bone. Dry maws of some fearful buried beasts that feed on vacuum and scream in pain each time they feel great Saturn's pull. Peering down upon the gravity-sculpted ground, I'll feel a million Terran eyes upon me, wondering what wonders I will see when I fly into bright sunlight once again. Miles-high plumes of tinkling, twinkling vapour shining bright against the endless night of space. Racing through them might my face feel the gentle touch of Enceladian dust. Tomorrow I will know, and as snow falls softly on the moon below, I watch it grow and grow and grow. This has been The Space Show. I'm Andrew Rennie. We'll have more about the Moon's Symphony next week.